This is the Frogcast.
Glad to have you here with us today as we talk about TCU's big 45-21 win over Iowa State. We talk about where the Frogs are 7 games into the season going into this bye week. We take a look around the rest of the country as well as the Big 12. And everybody in the country is sitting on the edge of their seat wanting to know who our top 5 are. That and so much more on this week's episode of the Frogcast. Well, Trey and Daniel, I don't know about you, but anytime the Frogs can get a win at a place where more than one national title hope has died up in Ames, Iowa, I am excited. So were you guys pleased with what you saw on Saturday night? Are you excited that we got a big win in Ames?
Yeah, it was good. Obviously, stay undefeated going into the bye was the key going into this game, and they accomplished that. Got a little banged up. Obviously, Dotson came back in the game. Hopefully that hip wasn't too bad. And then heard Coach Patterson say that Turpin's expected to be back for West Virginia. I thought that injury was a lot worse. It looked kind of like a bad concussion or maybe a shoulder collarbone type thing when he got hit. But should be back, you know, in good shape. And thought Lissenby really looked good, looked finally healthy, played a great game. But, you know, It's the big concern is another game where the Frogs defense gives up big points in the first half. Obviously this game, the first quarter, get hit with 21 points from Iowa State, which, you know, I don't think anybody was expecting. I mean, Iowa State's not some huge point scorer, and it's obviously disappointing to see. But I was just, you know, looking up some numbers, getting ready for the podcast, and in the last 4 games, when you look at TCU's defense, they're allowing an average of 21 points in the first half, but only 10.5 yards in the second half of those 4 games. If you just look at the last 2 games with Kansas State and Iowa State, they're giving up an average of 28 points in the first half, which is a ton of points, but only 5 in the second half. I mean, they shut out Iowa State after the first quarter the other night. And so you look at it, and yeah, this defense is not performing up to par, giving up a lot of points. But at the same time, I mean, I think it also, you have to speak to it as a positive that Coach Patterson and the players can see what's going on, make those adjustments. And I mean, when you look at the second half of Kansas State and the second half of Iowa State, I mean, those are completely different, you know, looking teams than the ones in the first half. And so, you know, I just think that's one positive that you can look at. I mean, I know this defense has a lot of things you can criticize, but to me, that was just something that I thought stuck out as, hey, you know, they're getting beat early, but they make adjustments and they're making stops now, you know. You can't really afford that during Baylor because, hell, they could jump out on you 35-0 if you're not, you know, careful. So something that they need to adjust, but I also thought that was a positive.
Yeah, being able to shut them out after the first quarter did speak volumes because they came racing out. You know, they had the fake punt. We had the missed tackle on the sidelines with the nice catch. And still, we were able to make those adjustments, like you said, and be able to pitch a shutout for quarters 2, 3, and 4. Well, we flip to the other side of the ball, and we see that this is just where this team is at its best, being able to put up points and put up points consistently. Daniel, when you take a look at the offense and what we did right in our win against the Cyclones, tell us a little bit about what you saw and a little bit about what you found out when you dug into the numbers.
On offense, it looked really good, just like we would expect. Boykin was 27 of 32. For 436 yards, 4 touchdowns, just pretty much what we expected. Except for maybe Aaron Green, I wasn't too sure about that. That didn't look so good. There's been some discussion online about that. I don't know if he's just tired. I was wondering, I kind of in the last game or two, I'd kind of been wondering where the spark is. I hadn't seen it, but the silver lining with that is we got to see Kyle Hicks come out. He carried it 7 times for 53 yards. He was electric. That was good to see. And in contrast, Green carried it 12 times for 7 yards. But that's not going to fly. Dotson was great. Had 10 receptions, 190 yards. And then awesome to see back. And I'm back in performing. Would be Listenby. He had, let's see, yeah, 6 receptions, 101 yards. And it's nice to have that weapon back out there. Something I didn't really care for, there's not a whole lot of numbers on Turpin because, as we saw, Turpin got hurt. I personally wasn't too thrilled with that, to try and run him up, like, you know, on the goal line. He's too small. I thought, I was posting that online, I thought he was dead. Those guys are huge, and they just plowed him. And I had actually been thinking about this in the last couple of weeks. You know, he's great out in space, but, you know, you can't just try and run him like that. And it looked really bad. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I agree with your entire assessment of running the ball. Aaron Green, he just didn't have a good game. You know, it's not about blaming him. It just wasn't his night. Kyle Hicks did have a great game, and I think we saw a spark not only for this season but next season. But, you know, I don't get paid $750,000 to be the offensive coordinator, but Turpin needs to get the ball in space. You know, I know that they basically ran a version of the jet sweep in order to get him that ball and, you know, to hit that corner quick. It just didn't work out, and he got hit hard. I know there's been comments from Coach Patterson about, you know, we have to limit his hits the same way you limit a pitcher's pitches. And we seem to be more than willing to get him to square his shoulders up and get going downfield in a tight spot down by the goal line. And I doubt that we'll see that again. So I concur with you about, you know, the things that went right on offense. But again, there were some sketchy things that we need to, I'm sure that the coordinators will keep an eye on. Well, I had a question that came in, and I'm going to throw it to you, Trey, because I know it popped up in your Twitter feed as well. We talked about defense, but one of the questions that came in from Jeff Craig said, should Coach Patterson switch Traven Howard and Denzel Johnson at linebacker and strong safety? That's kind of a creative question in terms of scheming the defense with the personnel that we have. What do you think about that, Trey?
Yeah, no, I thought that was a good question too, because I've seen it brought up. Me personally, I'm going to say this, people are going to think I'm crazy kind of, but I don't think that the linebackers have been our biggest problem. Have they been as good as maybe we thought they would be going into the season, you know, with the guys that were projected as starters that are now out? But to me, the biggest issues I'm seeing with the defense is the defensive line is not getting enough pressure on the quarterback.
I agree.
And our cornerbacks aren't getting their heads around and looking for the ball. And I don't know, you know, if it's just inexperience on their part, but it just seems time after time, they're not in bad position. They seem to be right there. It's just, you know, when you don't turn your head back and look for the ball, then that's like almost an automatic flag every time. So to me, if they could solve those two issues, the linebacker position wouldn't be that big of a problem. Now I'm saying that, you know, and they still have, you know, P. Ryan coming up, and he could make us look foolish and run all over us. But I just think those are the biggest problems that need to be solved in the bye week.
Yeah, I went back and watched a little bit of the game tape that I have on, you know, my DVR. Ty Summers played pretty well at linebacker when we had to make some adjustments. You know, he came in, he got a lot of reps. Now, he wasn't perfect, but it was nice to be able to see him in there making some stops, filling some holes, and being able to do some things that we're going to need him to do. I mean, you know, not to make light of it, but at the rate at which we have lost defensive players this season, it's not out of the question to think that we're going to need another linebacker to step up. And, the, you know, the linebackers aren't huge, but our big, experienced defensive line is just not getting any pressure on the quarterback, and that's what's got to change. I mean, I know we've had some guys coming back from injury a little slow. I know we got some guys out. There's no reason that Pearson and Tuua and Bradley and, you know, Bryce and Henderson are not in the backfield all the time. They're so big. They're so quick. And I think some of those adjustments might be able to come in the bye week with some health and some coaching. But I kind of agree with you, Trey. The problem is not turning around looking at the ball and not being able to get pressure on a quarterback. And if you do one, it might be able to help the other in terms of defensive scheme. Well, last week we had some great stats from Trey Fallon on Heisman stats this point into the season in terms of previous Heisman winners and comparing them to our own Trevon Boykin. Well, you'll never believe who stole those stats, basically. Of course it was ESPN, and they didn't even credit Trey, which they should have. But luckily we got somebody that's smarter than the folks up in Bristol in our own Trey. Trey, tell us a little bit about what you've seen in this this last week and adding Boykin stats to where he is after seven games compared to the rest of the people that have won the Heisman in the last few years that you've chronicled.
Yeah, it was so funny when I heard him say that on the broadcast, because like I knew they were what I dug up, because when I originally sent out the first tweet, when I started doing this, I was just comparing Boykin to Manziel and Griffin. And in that original tweet, that's the one that kind of blew up that Coach Patterson retweeted. And I mean, since then, I expanded it to include Winston and Mariota. So I've, you know, included more people, but the original one was those two guys. And like he said, almost the exact same thing as the tweet. So that was pretty funny. I was like, oh, those sound very familiar.
Yeah, I just want to say when I saw that Coach Patterson retweeted that, I wanted to just reply and say you have an open invitation to come onto our show really like this, but I just didn't think that's what he'd be thinking about right now.
No, yeah, I was like, holy cow, that is crazy. But yeah, so, okay, so 7 weeks in now, when you look at just the passing yardage, Boykin's leading the way, 2,539 yards. Robert Griffin would be second with 2,375 yards. So, you know, Boykin's, you know, what, like 150 yards in front of him. And then Winston would be third place with 2,177. So Boykin leading the way in passing yards, also leading the way in passing touchdowns with 25. The closest there is Winston and Griffin, both have 23 at this point. And then interceptions, Boykin has the second most. Manziel at this point had 6. Boykin has 5. The most impressive thing to me, really, when you just look at these numbers, Marcus Mariota, 19 touchdowns, but 0 interceptions 7 games in. So his season last year was really nice. And then the rushing yards, Boykin with 440, which is second most behind Manziel. Manziel was just running all over the place. He was at 703 yards rushing at this point in the year with 10 touchdowns, which is also first place in rushing yards. Boykin with 5 rushing touchdowns right now, which ties him second with Mariota. They both had 5 rushing touchdowns at this point. And then when you just look at average yards per game, factor all that in, Boykin's way ahead of everybody, averaging 425.5 yards a game. Second closest is Robert Griffin, and he's at 385. So, you know, Boykin with like, you know, what, 40 more yards, 50 more yards a game than Griffin. And total touchdowns, Boykin also leading the way with 30 total. Second closest was Robert Griffin and Winston. They both were at 26 at this point. So when you just look at the number 7 games in, Boykin is balling. And, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, the LSU running back, you know, and he's having a great year. But I don't know, when you just look at what Boykin's doing, especially if, which is a big if TCU gets through these final games undefeated, I mean, I don't know how you cannot. I mean, he's obviously, I pretty much almost put it as a lock that he'll be one of the 3 or 4 that they invite. But, man, when you just look at the numbers, and especially when you compare them to those other people, it's impressive.
Yeah, those are impressive numbers. You know, I don't want to play the poor me TCU card, but either of you guys, do you think that he would be leading as a candidate for Heisman Trophy if he was a quarterback at Ohio State and they were 7-0 with those numbers, or at Florida State or Florida or Alabama? Do you guys think that he would be the runaway the way that people are talking about Fournette right now?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, dude, if any of Ohio State's quarterbacks were doing this right now, they would be everywhere, freaking all over the internet, cover Sports Illustrated and stuff. Like, it would be ridiculous if this was, you know, if Texas had a quarterback of this caliber, which, you know, that's a joke, but it would be everywhere. It's ridiculous. I don't think people are really paying attention to what's going on.
I think ESPN is more than thrilled that Fournette came along, because they had a couple at Ohio State that maybe could push, but it was kind of iffy. But obviously it's Boykin that it's at the top. And then here comes Fournette, and now they're like, oh, phew, they can relax, because now they have a huge-ass school candidate that they can push. And anyway, whatever, I'll take off my foil hat now.
Well, you know, to give respect to our not-so-friends from the South, you know, RG3 won the Heisman with good numbers, and they were 9-3. So it wasn't like it was the best quarterback on the best team, which is what I think Boykin has to be in order to win the Heisman. So, you know, they can get attention, but man, the run, I mean, listening to people already talking about, you know, it's like listening to people talk about Hillary as the nominee, and it's like, oh, it's already determined. Everybody just, you know, you can be a bit player in this, but come on, I think Boykin's numbers, if they continue to run the table like Trey said, and those numbers continue to grow the way they have, I don't know how he doesn't win the Heisman, but I'm sure we'll all see a way that he doesn't. So, but on a personal note, if you haven't seen the video, which I'm sure everybody has, of the young people interacting with Boykin after the game, the young boy from Iowa State that was standing in kind of the high five line at Jack Trice Stadium, he was there and he got Boykin's towel that he threw to him, and they interviewed the kid afterwards, and he said he's an Iowa State fan, but he wants Boykin to win the Heisman. You know, I know that Iowa State is in the Big 12, but people in Des Moines do not care about TCU. And to see young kids like that talking about, I want Boykin to win the Heisman, I have this towel that now is going to make me the most famous kid in fifth grade in my school, that's cool stuff. And that builds our brand to be in that position for whoever comes after Boykin to be able to move up in the standing and the stature of the eyes of national college football. That's some good stuff on that. So, all right.
And what he did pregame with that girl. I mean, just those things. I don't know. That kid's impressive on and off the field.
It is. And I know Mariota kind of took this mantle last year, but it is nice to see a guy that is a good guy, that is a really good football player. You know, you see all this garbage that continues to go on with Manziel, and you see all that garbage that Mariota dealt with, and the Cam Newton and the money and all that. It's nice to see another guy stepping into that spot to get all of the spotlight on him in college football, and he's a good dude. You know, he's a really good guy. Yeah, I do love the way that he interacted with that young girl that was out there to flip the coin in pregame. That was pretty cool.
And he's never stolen crab legs.
He has not stolen crab legs, and he's never had a Title IX investigation either, as far as I know. So, but we'll just kind of leave it at that.
I don't think he's been passed out drunk in public either.
No.
Got in trouble for fighting, so.
He hasn't. He has not.
Maybe that's why he's behind.
Yeah, right.
Maybe we could, like, tell him to go to the Wii Lounge at, like, 1:30 and just start, like, throwing bottles. And next thing you know, he's going to be the number one vote-getter for people's expectations of the Heisman. So, see what we can do. Daniel, get on that. Never mind. We'll stop
right now. All right.
All right, guys, we are 7 games into the season. We get a bye week, a much-needed bye week. Let's just kind of take the pulse of where you guys feel like we are as a team. What have you seen that you like? What summarizes the state of the team at this point? And if you could just kind of sum up for us in one word or one paragraph how you feel about the Frogs right now, Trey, what would it be for you to summarize this at 7 weeks?
Yeah, when you know, we were getting the outline together for the show, I've been thinking, you know, is there one word or two words that, you know, kind of come to my mind when I think about the season so far? And I guess I really came up with surprised and stressed were like the two that came to mind. One, surprised because I am surprised that TCU was still undefeated at this point. You know, when we did our predictions in the first or second podcast, I thought that we would lose one game, maybe to Oklahoma, I think was my prediction. But after all those injuries at the beginning of the year, you know, I obviously predicted us to lose to Tech, which was tough, and they got through it. So I'm surprised they're undefeated. I think that's great. I think, you know, it shows a lot of resiliency with this team. But then obviously stress, because it is so stressful watching these games each and every week. And it just seems like each week is more dramatic, or there's something else that happens that you're like, holy shit, what the hell's going on? You know, didn't see that coming. Didn't see, you know, Iowa State dropping 21 points in the first quarter. You know, didn't see the tortilla tip coming. I thought that game was over once the ball got tipped. You know, just a lot of things. But, you know, I'm just really nervous about these last five, but then like I also like feel like, well, damn, we got Dodson, we got Boykin, we got Aaron Green. Like, our defense might not be, you know, where it needs to be, but these dudes can put it up and go in a shootout with any team in the country. And I mean, the way Boykin plays, like, how can you bet against that guy when the game's on the line? So, man, I don't know. It's been a fun season. These last five, I think, are going to be freaking crazy. Like, stressful, out of your mind, just great games. And it's like, I'm really looking forward to it, but I'm just like really nervous.
Yeah, that's a really good summary of that. That is a really good summary of that, Trey. Daniel, what one word are you using to describe the where we're at so far this season for the Frogs?
I'm going to go with anxiety, because last year, with such low expectations, coming off of, you know, a couple years, coming off of 4-8 and all that, it was, you didn't have anything to lose, really. It couldn't get much worse than that. So to watch us continue to win, and to, you know, besides the loss to Baylor, and keep going and move forward, and we keep moving up in the rankings, and it's just more and more exciting. It was so much fun. This year, we started at the top, and the struggle is to stay at the top. So I wake up on a Saturday morning, and I feel like I need a Xanax, and because you're nervous, you're afraid, and I'm not confident. I'm confident in the offense, but I'm not confident in the defense, for obvious reasons. So yeah, I mean, I'm anxious. I'm sitting there the whole game, and I got my socks pulled up all the way just in case. I got my fingers crossed, making sure my hat's just right and all that, because you're not sure what's going to happen, and you're extra afraid that something's going to happen, and it's just going to, you know, ruin the game, and then it feels like the climb to get where we want to be at the end of the season is just that much harder.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I changed shirts against Kansas State. I did that. Yes, I did that. I don't believe in any of that crap, and I did that. So I just thought I'd go ahead and put that out there. Yeah, one word that I would – I just think they have guts. That's the best way I can describe this team. You know, our defense is exactly what it is, and I don't have any other description than – somebody put that our defensive strategy is break but don't shatter. And I like that, but yeah. This team has guts. I mean, Aaron Green was not going to let that ball hit the ground in Lubbock. Boykin and Doxson were not going to let us lose in Manhattan. And when the game is on the line, you know, Green and Doxson and Boykin are just like, give us the ball. You know, it's a bit of a reach, of course, because it's not a comparable, but it's like the Bulls in the 90s. We have the ball with 7 seconds, and we're going to take care of things. You know, you knew Michael Jordan was going to win the game, and I've just reached a point where I know that Boykin is going to find a way to win this game, and this team has guts. You know, I thought, you know, we started the season with such high expectations, being, you know, the highest preseason rank that we'd ever had, and so I have these two tensions at the same time. One of them is, you know, we have those expectations that are real, and people still think that we're the number three team in the country. But when you look at every injury that we have, I feel like this entire season is just playing with house money at the same time. And so living with both of those things at the same time, which is, I didn't think we'd be at this point either, Trey, But everybody seems to think we're really good, and we just keep winning every week. And I think that that's the mantle of leadership that the triplets have handed this team. And they got guts. And I think they're going to find a way to beat West Virginia. And it's not going to be pretty. We're not going to beat them by 35 points like Baylor did. But I don't have any doubt that that's what we're going to be able to bring to the table with the guts that this team has.
Yeah, I agree with both y'all. And I mean, with Daniel too, I mean, last season was so much fun. It was great coming in with no expectations and hoping, you know, thinking maybe we could get 8 wins, maybe 9 in a good year, and then go on to win 12. But like this year, it is so much different and crazy, but it's also like fun in its own different kind of like psychotic way almost, because it's just like so, just like every game is just so intense. And obviously, you know, in the way college football is, you got to win every one, but then when you got to win every one, you know, down to the wire, it's just crazy. And you're right, Jeff, freaking guts is a great word to describe the team, because it's gutty every week.
Yeah, we beat Iowa State the way that I think we all thought we would beat Kansas State. And that's just kind of the recalibrated expectations that we have. But we've got 7 wins through 7 games, and that's really all that we needed. And that's where we're at. So I'm glad to be 7-0. Well, we want to look around really quick here to close out and give our chance to lay out our top 5 of who we think are the top 5 teams in the country right now. Trey, if you had to lay out a top 5 when we're voting in a poll, who would you have there at the top?
Yeah, I'm still rolling with Utah number 1, TCU 2, and then I think I'm going, I hate to do it, but I guess I'm going to go Clemson 3, Baylor 4, and LSU 5, I think would be kind of my top 5-ish. I think the last couple of weeks I had A&M in there, so I have to drop them out. And I guess that's kind of what I'm going to go with. I can't deny Baylor. Their offense does look good, but I still think their defense is trash, so whatever.
Yeah. They're all trash.
Yeah. Daniel, who you got for your 5?
Okay, well, as was pointed out last week, I put Baylor at number 1, but then my dad threatened to leave me out of the will, so I'm going to change it up a little bit. I still like Utah, so I'm going to put Utah at number 1, TCU at 2, because Baylor's at 3, whatever. And like Trey was saying, they do look good, but West Virginia scored a lot on them and could have scored a whole lot more, but they did themselves in, I think, as opposed to, like, Sean Oakman, what, he had 2 tackles? You know, it's just, it's junk. But anyway, that's another segment. After that, I'm pretty impressed with LSU. They look pretty strong, so I'll just throw them in there at 4, and then I'll round it off with Ohio State. They're still not all that impressive, but they're obviously still up there. But like I was saying, like the last 2, it's kind of – there's such a hodgepodge of all these teams that you could make arguments for those spots. So – but I'll just roll with that for now.
Okay. Well, I've got Utah number 1, TCU 2, Baylor 3. I got LSU at number 4, and I'm going to be curious to see how the SEC shakes out, because I think the best team's Alabama. But I also think it would be hilarious if Ole Miss won the SEC West and still won the whole, and won the conference title championship game and had a loss to Memphis. That's my hope. That's what I'm pulling for. But I got LSU at 4, and I couldn't decide whether to go with Clemson or Michigan State at 5, because I have to be fair and not hold a miracle finish against the team, because we had a miracle finish. You know, Michigan State just might be that team that played ugly against some bad teams and found a way to win in the big games. But I'm going to go with Clemson at 5, mostly because I think the rest of their schedule is trash. They're, man, they are the weakest of the Power 5, and it's not even close. So I'm going to go with Clemson at 5. But I got Michigan State at 6, and if they, you know, if they're able to get a couple more wins in the next few weeks, I might bump them up there. So, the good news is 2 and 3 are going to play, and all this stuff is going to sort out. We're not going to have to worry about it. So, well, fellas, in the time that we have, go ahead, Trey.
I was gonna say, just we didn't get to mention it, but shout out to Justin Fuente. That was a big win for Memphis over Ole Miss. So that was good to see. Obviously, strengthen his resume. It'll be curious to see, you know, what happens with him after this season over, if he leaves for one of those openings or if he stays put for maybe a bigger job in a year or two. I mean, I would obviously think he would. I don't know. I don't think Memphis is, you know, that great of a job. He's done a hell of a job with it, though, so I'm really interested to see what he gets into next. And I wish he would just kind of go somewhere and, like, get groomed for, you know, 8-10 years, however long it takes for GP to decide to finally hang it up, and we can just kind of, like, slowly transition him in or something. Like, I wish it could work out that way, because I'm a big fan of his. I think he's going to have a good career wherever he does go.
And they didn't squeak that out. You know, they dominated.
No, they looked good, yeah.
They really did. And so the jokes were kind of like, you know, because of what we did in the Peach Bowl, is kind of like, did Gary, like, give him all his secrets or something like that? And I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, they did. That was funny to see people commenting on that. But you're right. I mean, they just didn't squeak this out. This was no fluke. There was I think there were 9 minutes left in the game, and Ole Miss got the ball, and they went on like a 13-play, 6.5-minute drive, and it was just, we're going to punch you and go 7 yards. We're going to punch you and go 7 yards. And, man, I never want to hear about this overhyped Landshark defense again, because they got pushed around by a bunch of kids that got recruited to a 2-10 Memphis team. I mean, that's coaching for you right there. None of these kids were like, oh, do I go to Memphis or do I go to Ole Miss? No, they're like, do I go to Ole Miss or do I go to, you know, I mean, they had recruits that nobody else wanted, and they just went and killed Ole Miss. And I thought it was great. I will be curious where he goes, because he should. I hope he doesn't take the South Carolina job. I just think that's a resume killer. The last two coaches they've had won national championships, and they couldn't even win the SEC ever there. So that's a bad job. I think, honestly, if I had my druthers, if he wasn't at TCU, I wish he'd go to Oklahoma. You know, people forget he played quarterback there for a little bit. I'd like to see him back in the Big 12, maybe in the SEC and not the Big 12. But
is he going to wear like sunglasses and be all cool and everything too?
No, that's the thing I like about Fuente. He's not cool. I mean, he looks like he's going to, you know, spit Red Man in your face and stare at you. I like him.
I was just making a lame Kingsbury joke.
Oh, yeah, we only have so much time to make lame Kingsbury jokes.
The tortilla tips are good enough Kingsbury jokes.
It is. Well, the next time we talk, 82 points is nice. Yeah, 82 and then tortilla tip. That's just so much fun to say to Tech fans. So, yeah, they've all kind of quieted down here, especially when they look so bad against Kansas this last week.
Yeah, what was that? Good Lord.
Ugh, that was ugly. I think that's also part of playing 7 games. They haven't had a bye week either. I forgot. You know, I was looking at who had actually played 7 games. They had played 7 games. But we also have to keep in mind, we can't make fun of people that have close games against Kansas. Because,
well, yeah.
Damn it if we didn't. Yeah. Well, the next time we talk, we're going to look at West Virginia, guys. We're going to wrap this show up here tonight. Hope you enjoyed listening to the Frogcast. I hope that you will take the time to find us on iTunes, find us on Stitcher Radio. You can follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, or you can go to our website, thefrogcast.com. We always post this on Killer Frogs, and we thank them for letting us put that out there. Go to their site, go to their shop, spend some money, post on the site. They would love it. Send any traffic we can that way. And so, guys, for Trey Fallon, for Daniel Southern, I am Jeff Mitchell, and I want to thank you for listening to the Frogcast.